Turn to Philippians chapter 4, if you will. I guess this morning was my lesson of kind of encouragement to give you something to think about for the week, something to work on in terms of the exhortation. Tonight's kind of a teaching lesson, I guess, a teaching point. As Kurt was doing his lesson, or doing his song, started making me think about heaven. I thought about doing a sermon on heaven tonight, so maybe I'll continue to work on that and do that next week. It's a lesson to build us up. But tonight, I'm going to do a lesson that I call... Let's see if I can find my clicker thing. Targeted giving. Somebody asked me to do a lesson a while back on giving. And so I'm going to do that. Look, if you would, though, at a few verses in Philippians chapter 4. Philippians chapter 4 is a launching pad. That's all right. I can probably do it from here. Philippians chapter 4, let's read verse 14 to 18. This is an example of where churches gave in the first century. Maybe that'll help. Tell me,
pick that up. There's a button on the black box right there in front of you.
Oh.
It says mic.
All right, it's on.
There should be two lights on.
There we go. We're set. All right, let's try it again. Philippians chapter 4, 14 to 18. Church at Philippi, helping the Apostle Paul, doing their part to try to encourage him in the situation he was in. It's very difficult. And it said, he wrote them this letter back, referring back to some things that they had done for him, and said, "Nevertheless, you have done well, that you have shared in my distress. Now you Philippians know also that in the beginning of the gospel, when I departed from Macedonia, no church shared with me in concerning giving and receiving, but you only. For even in Thessalonica, you sent aid once and again for my necessities. Not that I seek the gift, but I seek the fruit that abounds to your account. Indeed, I have all and abound. I am full, having received from Epaphroditus the things which were sent from you, sweet-smelling aroma, an acceptable sacrifice, well-pleasing to God." There's a church in California where a friend of mine preaches, named Mike Wilson, Santa Clara. I don't know if you visited there or not, but there's a church in Santa Clara. And he was telling me that about a year ago, there were several people at that church in a pretty tough situation economically because of the challenges and some job losses. And the elders decided to try something different. They told the congregation in advance that in a certain amount of weeks, on a particular Sunday, they were going to devote every dollar that was contributed on that day, first day of the week, to those families who were in need. And regular expenses that had to take care of the building, et cetera, would be from the, I guess you'd say, the surplus funds that were in the bank account, that group. He said they had about 100 members, and several people were hurting financially, and I mean, with few exceptions, most of the others had some type of job challenges or wage freezes or cutbacks. It was just a kind of tough time. And so that Sunday came and the contribution was made. And later that contribution totaled up to be $18,620. And those several families that were struggling benefited a lot from the generosity of the other members. And he told me that, not as a way to brag about the group or anything, but just talking about what can be accomplished when there's something called targeted giving. It made a good point, made an impression on me when I thought about that. And so as I thought about this sermon, I wanted you to give some thought to that idea, targeted giving. And the first point, really only had a couple of points to make, and that is the first thing is when needs are identified, God's people respond. And you can see that in the New Testament. That really is the pattern in the New Testament giving. If you start in chapter 11 of Acts, we'll just read a few verses here. chapter 11, there was a circumstance where there was a famine in the Judean area, pretty common in that part of the world. And a prophet named Agabus came down and informed the brethren of a need. And it says, in these days, prophets came from Jerusalem to Antioch. It was in Antioch. And one of them, named Agabus, stood up, showed by the Spirit that there was going to be a great famine throughout all the world, which also came to pass in the days of Claudius Caesar. And then the disciples, each according to his ability, determined to send relief to the brethren dwelling in Judea. And they did also this also, sending it to the elders by the hands of Barnabas and Saul. What a response to a particular need that had to be resolved. Later, Paul would encourage the churches of the Gentiles to help the poor saints in Jerusalem if they were able to do it. Look, if you would, in Romans chapter 15. Romans 15, verse 26 and 27. Paul has said, I'm going to Jerusalem to minister to the saints, to serve the saints there and their needs. And he said, for it's pleased those from Macedonia and Achaia to make a certain contribution for the poor saints who are in Jerusalem. And it has pleased them indeed, and they are their debtors. For if the Gentiles have been partakers of their spiritual things, their duty is also to minister to them in material things. And so, here you have this need, this particular need in Jerusalem, and you have other churches seeing that need, being made aware of that need, and taking a contribution in order to send to help those saints in that particular place and resolve their need. Look over to 2 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 1 through 5. He referred to churches in Achaia that participated in this. Here's a letter that was written to the church in Corinth to spur them on to do what they had intended to do, what they had made commitments to do regarding the same situation. Concerning the ministering to the saints, it is superfluous for me to write to you. It's kind of almost unnecessary. Because I know of your willingness, about which I boast of you to the Macedonians, that Achaia was ready a year ago, and your zeal has stirred up the majority. And yet I've sent the brethren, lest our boasting of you should be in vain in this respect. That as I said, you may be ready, lest perhaps if some Macedonians come with me and find you unprepared, we, not to mention you, should be ashamed in this same confident boasting. Therefore I thought it necessary to exhort the brethren to go to you ahead of time and prepare your bountiful gift beforehand, which you had previously pledged, that it may be ready as a matter of bounty and not as covetousness. So here you have again this preparation being made among congregations, Gentile groups, to help in a particular need in Jerusalem due to this famine where there were some needy brethren. And if you look back at one other passage in 1 Corinthians chapter 16, which is interesting, this is the most frequently cited passage that we use in assemblies to prepare people for the giving or the contribution on the Lord's Day. And it refers to a targeted effort. He says here in verse 16, chapter 16, verse 2, on the first day of the week, start in verse 1. Now concerning the collection for the saints, as I have given orders to the churches of Galatia, so you do also. On the first day of the week, let each one of you lay something aside, storing up as he may prosper, that there be no collections when I come. And when I come, whoever you approve by your letters, I will send to bring your gift to Jerusalem. And if it's fitting that I go also, they will go with me. So, this was a collection for the saints. That for means there's a particular purpose. It was purpose-driven. It was targeted. the saints in Jerusalem. Now, when I talk about this tonight, it's not that I'm opposed to a general collection to have some funds that we can pay our, you know, meet our obligations for having a place to meet or having some songbooks that help us to sing. Having the necessities, the things that are necessary for us to fulfill the commandments God gave us to do together. That's all fine. But it's interesting that this verse here in 1 Corinthians 16 is not for a general collection. It really doesn't have anything to do with the general collection. And I think we give very little thought to that when we use it to encourage people to give on Sunday morning. It was for a targeted reason. It was a particular purpose. The implication is they really probably didn't give maybe prior to that. I'm not sure, but there's, this is kind of, there was a need, and then he would say, well, there, you need to take care of this particular need. The need was pre-designated, he said. Now concerning the collection for the saints, as I have given orders to the churches of Galatia, it's pre-designated. There were long-term goals set to meet this need. 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 8 through 11. This was something that wasn't done on the spur of the moment. It wasn't done on a Sunday morning when everybody came together. It says in chapter 8, verse 10 and 11, and in this I give my advice. It is to your advantage not only to be doing what you began and were desiring to do a year ago, but now also complete the doing of it. And that as there was a readiness to desire it, so there also may be a completion out of what you had. So there were long-term goals set. You can almost hear on Sunday, okay, don't forget now, we're putting together this fund with the goal that in a certain amount of time, we're going to send this money to help those saints in Jerusalem. It may be 12 months from now, but it is something we're doing with a particular purpose in mind. And there would be messengers that were approved and appointed in order to transport their gifts safely. 1 Corinthians 16 and verse 3. So I guess, as I think about this type of purpose-driven, targeted type giving, I always just raise the question, how well do we do that? How well do we do that? When we think about what we want to do as a church in terms of the work of the Lord, how much do we talk about that? Do we look at what the possibilities are, what the needs are, whether we want to support somebody who's preacher or help somebody like the Philippians did Paul, or whether there's some particular need that we need to meet and somebody who has a need or a necessity economically or financially. Does that characterize our giving? I don't know. Maybe on a January budget meeting, I kind of remember more or less some things being said about the coming year. We kind of know some of the things we do. There's some reports on the back bulletin board about people that we support. But, how much do we put that in front of us so that we are, acutely aware of what we're doing when we are giving? What I'm saying is, that is something that causes people to want to respond and to give. I want to show you the same principle in the Old Testament. Go back to Exodus chapter 35. Exodus 35. Kind of a big section. I'm not going to read all of this. But it was when Moses was making preparations to build the tabernacle. God spoke to him on the mountain, gave him the design, gave him the blueprints, told him all the particular things that were needed to achieve God's purpose to build his house. And there was material that was needed. So Moses, in verses 4 through 19, he identified the specific needs to be able to construct this house. And said, I don't really want to read all of 4 through 19. But after he did communicate to them the particular things that were needed, look at the response in verse 20. Then the whole Israelite community withdrew from Moses' presence, and everybody who was willing and whose heart moved him came and brought an offering to the Lord for the work on the tent of meeting. for all its service and for the sacred garments. All who were willing, men and women alike, came and brought gold jewelry of all kinds, brooches, earrings, rings, ornaments, and they presented their gold as a wave offering to the Lord. By the way, a wave offering was a volunteer offering. A wave offering wasn't it like the typical tithing that they did. This was a volunteer offering. And everybody who had a blue or purple, scarlet yarn or fine linen, goat hair, ram skins, dyed red, hides of sea cows brought them. Those who presented an offering of silver or bronze brought it as an offering to the Lord. And everybody who had a acacia wood for any part of the work brought it. Every skilled woman spun with her hands and brought what she had spun, blue, purple, scarlet yarn, or fine linen. And all the women who were willing and had the skill spun the goat hair. And the leaders brought onyx stones and other gems to be mounted on the ephod and breastplate. And they also brought spices and olive oil for the light and for the anointing oil and for the fragrant incense. All the Israelite men and women who were willing brought to the Lord free will offerings for all the work the Lord through Moses had commanded them to do. So here's this task here that God sets before them. Here's something I want to do. I want you to build me a house. Here's some of the things that's going to be needed to construct that. Moses took that information, put it before the people, and said, what can you do to help on this particular thing? And the response of the people was overwhelming. In fact, it was so overwhelming that, as probably most of us know, verse 30, it said, Moses said to the Israelites, see, the Lord has chosen... Sorry, got the wrong verse there. Go back to chapter 36, verse 5 and 6. It says, Moses said, the people are bringing more than enough for doing the work of the Lord, the work the Lord commanded be done. And then Moses gave an order that they sent this word throughout the camp. No man or woman is to make anything else as an offering for the sanctuary. And so the people were restrained from bringing more because what they had already had was more than enough to do all the work. And so here was a need. It was put before the people. The people responded to that need. And when that need was met, the giving was ended. It was accomplished. I think that's interesting because that's kind of the same thing you see in the New Testament. There was a particular need. It was brought before the people. And in that case, it was some particular needs of individuals who were hurting because of the famine, had some financial needs. And people responded to that. They met the need. And I suspect that was the end of the giving for that particular need. That's targeted giving. That's purpose-driven giving. And that really is, I think that is a good principle of New Testament giving that we need to write in our hearts. And it makes a difference in that particular part of our work for the Lord. And here's the lesson. I just did four lessons that we can learn from that. The first thing is, we should collect with a pre-designated purpose if we want to follow New Testament giving. Don't collect money on an automatic pilot. If church collections are truly purpose-driven and targeted, then we should identify the needs. Talk about them in advance and pray about them. And even when we take up a general collection on the Lord's Day, I'm not saying that's wrong. There are things that we have to have in order to meet our obligations just to meet together. But there should be a concerted effort to talk about where the money goes and the good that's being accomplished, even with things that we do among ourselves. Normally, we really don't do this. We kind of, really, when we talk, really, just about as a rule, with a little exception, when we do somebody says something up here about the giving, we talk about all the blessings God's given us and how, since He's given us so many blessings, we ought to give back. So we kind of, say, hey, we need to give because God's given to us. We ought to give generously. But in reality, people need to be reminded of the particulars. What exactly is going on with what I'm doing? What am I supporting? Tell me about that. What's going on with this that I'm giving? Money, our contribution, is the church at work. Money is work. It's a resource that we use to do the work that God gave this group to do. That's what it is. That's why we say visitors aren't required to do it, really. We don't ask that or solicit anything from our visitors. They are should be part of another group, should they not? They should be a part of a congregation somewhere. And they have obligations there that they should have committed themselves to. They should have left their money, perhaps, with that group. Do you understand the point? You go on vacation, somebody says, well, I'll just give there. I won't give where I'm at. I'll just give there when I go somewhere else this week. Well, do you even know what we're using our money for? Are you sure that you want to participate? You know? Where's that money going? What about where you are? Will there be a shortage at the end of the month because you gave somewhere else? Because if we followed the New Testament pattern, there would be purpose-driven giving at the churches where we are. And we know our obligations, and there's obligations we need to meet. So we need to collect with a predesignated purpose if we want to really follow, I think, more closely New Testament giving. Here's the second thing. We need to make sure targeted funds are used for intended purposes. When there is a targeted collection and you get more funds than what are anticipated, there may be a temptation to sort of reroute some of that those expenditures. Don't do it. Can you imagine when government increases taxes and they say, what do they say? They say, we need more money for schools, we need more money for roads. And then after that money is approved and it's collected by higher taxes, then a large percentage of those proceeds are diverted to what do they call it? Pork spending? Some other purpose? What happens? People say, that's a mismanagement of funds. That's wrong. We didn't give you permission to use our money for that. And so there's more of an unwillingness to be generous, to give or to help. You see what I'm saying? And so we can really mess up people's willingness to give if we do that. Only use things for what it's designated for. Purpose-driven giving. Next one. We should give saints, people, a sense of ownership in the good work that we want to do. Back to Acts chapter 11 really quick. When Agabus identified the need to the saints in Antioch, there seems to be a very personal, individual, grassroots kind of response. Chapter 11, verse 29. Says, then the disciples each individually, according to his ability, we're looking at the individual now, according to his ability, determined to send relief to the brethren dwelling in Judea. Whose idea was it for them to do this? That particular person. It was those who did the giving. They were the ones that made the determination to give the funds to help the need in Jerusalem. Look in 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 3 and 4. Here's another. It's a marvelous illustration of the right kind of spirit of giving. The people who wanted an ownership in what was going on here. And the good work that was being done. Look in chapter 8, verse 3 and 4. Here's where Paul was recounting to the Corinthians how the Macedonians had participated in the sharing and participating in this work of helping the needy saints. And they were pretty poor people. And I get the impression he wasn't going to ask them to help because of the kind of economic poverty they were experiencing. But it says, for I bear witness according to their ability, yes, and beyond their ability, they were freely willing, imploring us with much urgency that we would receive the gift and the fellowship of the ministering or the service to the saints. Even when it's a congregational involvement in meeting needs, there should be a lot of communication, I think, between, of the opportunities, or that's there. That, you know, there should be congregational input into those things that are being done, because a congregation that's well informed of particular needs and really gets involved in that is going to sacrifice more. They're willing to do that. Speaking with somebody, I was talking to somebody about the Christian and money, and his money, and he said, "Well, we need to emphasize that the Lord comes first. Well, that we ought to, when we make decisions about what we're going to give, that should be the first thing we decide every month." And I said, "Amen to that." But if you really want that to happen, and you want other people to sacrifice other things, material things, in order to give to the Lord's work, then targeted giving motivates at the heart level. I mean, you can demand it from people as a man of duty. You can say, "You got to do it. That's what the Lord says. You can do that." But the heart wants to give with purpose, not merely as a duty, but it an act of love. And the more people are involved in particulars, what's being done, the more they're willing to sacrifice to help with whatever need there is to be met. And so, you know, we want to give saints this sense of ownership in a good work, that they want to be personally involved at the root level, at the heart level, so that they'll be that those needs will be met. And then the last thing is that church giving should focus on meeting needs and not fattening a bank account. Probably it's been some of us who've been a part of groups at times that really have huge bank accounts, but they don't use it for the Lord's work. And we need to think about that. I'll remember this. The treasury is in the congregation, not in the bank. The treasury is in the congregation, not in the bank. You might think about some of the terms that Paul used in these two chapters, in 2 Corinthians chapter 8, to describe the contribution that these people were a part of. Chapter 8 and verse 1, he said, "Moreover, brethren, we make known to you the grace of God bestowed on the churches of Macedonia." That it was the grace of God. Verse 2, "In the great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy and their deep poverty abounded in the riches of their liberality," or their generosity. Verse 4, he says, "Imploring us with much urgency that we would receive the gift and the fellowship of the ministering to the saints," the fellowship. Verse 6, he said, "So we urged Titus that he had, as he had begun, so he would also complete this grace in you as well." Verse 20 of that chapter, or verse 19. "And not only that, but who was also chosen by the churches to travel with us with this gift?" Same thing in verse 20. "Avoiding this, that anyone should blame us in this lavish gift which is administered to us." Verse 24 talks about it being the proof of your love. Notice where the treasury is. The treasury is in the people, in the heart of the person. It's not in a bank. Chapter 9 and verse 1. He said, "Now concerning the ministering," or the service to the saints. Verse 12. Again, "For the administration of this service not only supplies the needs of the saints, but abounding in many thanksgivings to God." And then in verse 13, he says, "While through the proof of this ministry they glorify God for the obedience of your confession to the gospel of Christ and for your liberal sharing with them and all men." So here's a word, the sharing. So, you know, I'm just emphasizing that the treasury is in the person and not just in a bank. Such generous giving is accomplished best in the context of giving that is highly targeted. This is what we're going to do. This is a person we're going to help. This person has this particular need. This is how much he needs. What can we do to help? People are willing to help when things are given that way. So purpose-driven giving involves each one making up his own mind, not reluctantly, cheerful, not under compulsion, not because somebody's putting the screws to him and trying to force somebody to do something that's against their will. But a cheerful giver is one who really wants to help in a particular matter. And when you really want to be a part of something, then generosity is just a natural outgrowth of that. It just comes naturally. So I'm encouraging us to think in those terms. Maybe it's just a reminder. Maybe everybody knows this. It's just a simple lesson on the contribution But sometimes we think only in terms of just a general collection. And we work to justify that, and we do have to light the building so we can get together. And it's helpful to have a nice, air-conditioned, comfortable room. But, you know, really in the New Testament, what you see is targeted giving. You see purpose-driven giving. That's why you see generosity in saints in the New Testament, because they know what they are giving for, and it was constantly put before them so they know, and things were set out so that they could see, this is what we want to accomplish. Even if it's 12 months down the road, this is what we want to achieve. Is this a worthy goal? Is this not a? Is this something that we want to be to work in unity and in fellowship in? And everybody says, yes, that is great. That is a true need. That's a scriptural, you know, need. That's a person that's in need. That's something that can be a blessing. We want to do that. And as that's kept before people's minds and hearts, they're willing to meet those needs and do it abundantly. So that's the lesson this evening. Short, no, maybe not, but short enough, long enough. All right, why don't you get your songbooks out? And well, number 283 is a song that we're going to sing in just a minute. There's a great day coming. This is a song that reminds us that when we die, there's something important that's going to happen. A day when the saints and the sinners are going to be parted right and left. Stand before the Lord, great judge of all the earth. And it's going to be a bright day for some people. It'll be a bright day. But the brightness shall only come to those who love the Lord. Where are we on that? We love the Lord. Only for those who love Him. That's who He's going to bring. It's going to be good news on that day. It's going to be a day of the Lord that's full of good news and hope and expectation. And then it's also a day that's sad. Always the day of the Lord's a good day for some and a bad day for the others. A sad day's coming. A day when the sinner shall hear his doom depart unknowing none. We don't want that for anybody. That's why we always give people opportunity to make a decision and respond to the gospel, make a good confession that Jesus is the Lord, baptized for the forgiveness of their sins. Tonight, if that's something you want to do, when the water is ready, prepare, and we'd love to help you do that while we stand and sing our song.